I'm a rank and file member of United Electrical Workers, UE, which is a diverse union with membership in many different sectors of the economy, originally formed by workers in the electrical manufacturing industry, General Electric and so forth. But we also represent people in the public sector, service sector, education, healthcare, and many other places. So I want to talk about three ways that free trade agreements and the political agenda that drives it, neoliberalism, have affected our members and the communities we live in. Specifically, I will address the effect of plant closings as corporations close factories and leave town to chase lower wages, how privatization affects workers in the public sector and the services that they provide, and how for-profit corporations in the service sector take advantage of lower labor and regulatory standards to pursue the same kind of race to the bottom that is better known in manufacturing. In manufacturing, the case is pretty clear. We demonstrated that at the beginning. As Jack Welch, former CEO of General Electric, or Generous Electric, as we call them in the UE, famously explained, corporations would ideally like to have every factory on a barge, which they could sail to find the lowest environmental regulations, the cheapest labor, the most corrupt, friendly governments at any point. Given the chance, corporations will shut down even profitable factories in order to make more profit elsewhere, and this has devastating effects on workers in the communities they live in. For example, take the case of the Stanley Tool Plant in Shaftesbury, Vermont. They shut down their plant about a year or two ago. Incidentally, this was the most profitable Stanley plant in the U.S. It made higher profit, per worker, per unit, or whatever, than any other Stanley plant in the U.S. But they closed it down in order to move work to Mexico, South Carolina, and China because they felt they could make more profit that way. And in fact, when they were hiring workers in South Carolina, they told them, don't expect to work here very long. Because we're not going to, we're opening this plant to take advantage of tax breaks. We're not actually going to stay here to give you a career. So in Shaftesbury, Vermont, which, the massive metropolis that Shaftesbury, Vermont is, you have 250 people out of work. That's a lot of people with no comparable jobs available in the area. In fact, the company held a job fair in the plant, thoughtful of them. But none of the companies who came to the fair were actually hiring. So it wasn't really, all that useful. So you have 250 people living on unemployment, getting jobs at half the wages they were previously making, which are often part-time or temporary jobs with no benefits. And these people are not spending the money they used to spend in the community. So your restaurants, your hardware stores, and local business in general is suffering. The town and the school district are no longer collecting property taxes from Stanley Tools, so they have to cut music programs, lay off teachers, and raise property taxes on homeowners. UE Local 273, which is the union for the production workers in the plant, is no longer able, because it doesn't exist, to organize people to participate in local charitable activities, volunteer fire department stuff. And the people who are now shuffling two or three part-time jobs no longer have the time or ability to schedule parent-teacher conferences or meetings of the parent-teacher associations. People are stressed out about being laid off, and it causes tensions in the family. There's more alcoholism, more divorce, more domestic violence. I mean, there's the whole, and you see this in deindustrialized areas, throughout the U.S. And as a result of people losing their higher-paying jobs, the state of Vermont loses income tax revenues as people's incomes go down. And the result in the current political climate is pressure to cut precisely those social services which people need even more after they lose their jobs, mental health counseling, Vermont Health Access Program, and so forth. Now, public sector workers, in addition to being threatened by the sort of secondary effects of plant closings, are also threatened by the scourge of privatization. And privatization, while not directly enforced by NAFTA, other than sort of incidentally through Chapter 11, as Tom Hanson was talking about with UPS and the Postal Service in Canada, but it is part of the same neoliberal corporate agenda and is, in fact, being written into the proposed FTAA under provisions about trade and services. To give you sort of a little local example, recently this very public university, UVM, tried to privatize its shuttle system. In a nutshell, this would have meant the 10 or so regular shuttle drivers who currently have full-time jobs with decent wages and good benefits, including free tuition for themselves and their children, probably one of the most important benefits of working at UVM, would have been out on the street. Most of the corporations bidding on the service employ only part-time workers, offer no benefits, have very high turnover, and needless to say, their workers do not enjoy the other benefits of a union contract, like a grievance procedure and so forth. Obviously, the students, faculty, and staff who ride the shuttles have concerns that the people driving them, know the routes, have a proven safety record, right? These are sort of the public concerns, which you just are not going to get from a private company that has an incentive to increase profits by cutting corners. Now, fortunately, in this little small example, we won. The Shuttle Drivers Union, UE Local 267, Students and Faculty for Peace and Global Justice, the ISO, Student Government Association, Vermont Workers Center, and numerous state legislators mobilized the community, got 1,100 signatures on a petition, and took a group delegation in to visit the interim president, who wasn't too happy to see them. And UVM actually backed down on this in this, you know, small little struggle here. So there's a happy ending to this story. And the shuttle driving will stay in-house, but if the FTAA were in place, right, the private bus companies who could have profited from this, Laidlaw Corporation and your other friendly neighborhood businesses, right, could claim that they were unjustly denied profits because of this decision. And then finally, I want to touch on briefly on a struggle that another group of workers in our union has engaged in recently. The 100-plus women and men who work at Berlin Health and Rehab, a for-profit nursing home in central Vermont, members of UE Local 254, engaged in a bitter 18-month struggle to organize a union and negotiate a first contract in order to improve pay and staffing levels in the nursing home. And I won't go into all the details of that very long struggle, but one of the things, the sort of salient point here, that we found out during the struggle is that Berlin Health and Rehab is owned by, and was purchased about 5 years ago by, a Canadian corporation called CPL REIT. Now, CPL owns a big chain of nursing homes in Canada, and over 90% of them are unionized, decent benefits, decent pay, and so forth. But over the last several years, CPL has been investing its resources not in improving care in, or let alone pay in it for its residents and workers in Canada, but in purchasing, buying up existing nursing homes in the U.S. And the reason for this is pretty simple. In the U.S., wages are lower, unions and labor law protection are weaker, and regulation of nursing homes is less stringent. So, therefore, U.S. nursing homes are a more profitable investment than Canadian ones. Berlin is so far the only CPL-owned nursing home in the U.S. to successfully organize, and CPL spent well over $500,000 trying to prevent that in fees to $300-an-hour lawyers from Connecticut, a really productive, you know, aspect of the economy there. So what you see is, right, this company has made its money, made its capital in Canada from the work of Canadian workers and money from the Canadian Medicare system. And rather than using that money to improve anything in Canada, they're using it almost solely to squelch workers in the U.S. I'm almost done. So, and as well as on, say, campaign contributions to Howard Dean and other sort of legislative attempts to prevent regulations. So what you see is that under a free trade regime, service sector corporations, even though they can't move the actual production, can move their capital from country to country, again, in search of the lowest labor and regulatory standards. So to sum up, free trade has been a disaster for Vermont workers in all sectors of the economy. These trade agreements are part of an overall corporate agenda to do away with anything that stands in the way of corporate profits, including labor rights, environmental regulations, and the very existence of public services. And this agenda threatens all workers. And this agenda must be resisted, and as our experience with the shuttle drivers at UVM has shown in its small way, resistance does work. Thanks.